Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us once again. And Kevin, any idea why the goalies are that much better in the shootout right now than players? Like, it's running around 30% goals for the scorers, meaning the goalies are at 70%. How come they dominate in break or in the shootout?
Because we're better. It's interesting. I'm watching Jacob Markstrom, for example, go 7-for-7 against the Washington Capitals the other night, and obviously TJ Oshie is like TJ Sochi, as they called him after Russia and the Olympics. He's just like, he's money. He's got two moves that where he's reading off the goaltender as opposed to just coming in one or the other. And if a goalie bites on a certain fake, he's deking around him, and if he doesn't, he just shoves it five hole, and he's just been incredible with that. And Markstrom had the patience to wait him out. I think, you know, it's been, interestingly enough, I've been talking to a lot of goalies about this over the past couple of weeks for an upcoming column about, do you want to know how much of a pre-scout, how much is too much? Do you want to know all their moves or what their A or B move is, or if you get caught cheating to one, are you kind of screwed, frankly, because if you get caught cheating on anything in this day and age, you're done. And, you know, it's a mixed bag. There's no absolutes. The shootout, like I said, Markstrom 7-for-7 on the shootout, yet in breakaways this year, he's less than 50%, which is way below the average. Like, he has been below league average significantly against breakaways, and yet, like all the goalies, dominant in the shootout. I just think there's only so many moves that players can make, and we've hit a point where I'm not sure, as creative as the players are, I'm not sure there's anything goalies haven't seen. And so the amount of patience goaltenders have right now to sort of hold edges, not overcommit, top of crease as the player hits the hash mark, that's your rule of thumb. You want to be sort of heels out, match their speed. By the time the player hits the hash mark, if you're at the top of your crease, you're in great shape. You're trying to force a deke because a deke is left or right. A shot can go anywhere. High glove, low glove, five hole, blocker side, high, low, anywhere. You're trying to create a deke by taking the right amount of ice. And nowadays we saw players go fast and then slow, and that threw goalies off for a while. But I think they've just adjusted to all these different looks. And it's kind of on players. As creative as they are offensively, I don't know that there's anything out there where goalies are just like, geez, I haven't seen that before. That's unstoppable. And I guess maybe it's just a confidence thing. And right now it's definitely in the goaltender's favor. And it's getting to the point where, you know, some of these shootouts, I hate to say mundane, but like watching that Canucks shootout, they basically just, Holpe is more aggressive, comes way out. And again, the first six guys didn't score. They all just kind of came in straight lines and shot, and he just waited and reacted to the shot, and it made it look easy. And, you know, frankly, not all that exciting. Bo Horvat was the only guy who decided to change up angles, came in and sort of crisscross, made Holpe move more left to right, and then deposited a low blocker side shot by, again, changing the shooting angle really quickly, at the same time that he had Holpe moving, you know, side to side. So, you know, I think part of it is just goalies having a book. I think part of it at times, I watch shooters come in straight lines and I'm just like, why? Like, if you, we know what making a goalie moves does, why would you just attack him in a straight line? So all those things add up to goalies being better, and you know, maybe the pendulum swings the other way. But right now, I can't really see it when I watch shootouts. It looks at times like it's too easy for these guys.
Kevin, a few things to get to. Let's go to, you know, the Vezina. To me, Kemper, Binnington, Greiss were at the top, along with Bishop. You know, Bishop's coming. But to me, Darcy Kemper and what he's done in Arizona right now through a quarter of the year would be my number one. Who would be yours?
I'd probably have Binnington higher, to be honest with you, and I get it. And this is nothing against Darcy Kemper, but I went over some numbers with Steven Valiquette from Clearsight Analytics. We've talked about them before for your listeners that aren't familiar. These are proprietary numbers. His analytics company measures 34 points of data for every shot. They include things like screens, layered screens. How many different layers of screens does the puck come through? Pre-shot movement. Is the puck passed or carried across the slot line, which is an imaginary line that divides the middle of the ice? And much like I said, shootouts, making a goalie move, plays that move across that slot line and are shot quickly, the chances of the goal going in, one-third of them go in compared to shots from the same location without that lateral movement. And so he measures a lot of those things, 17 different types of shots. He walked me through their new platform for looking at it, and it's incredible how layered the data gets. And when you add it all up, Darcy Kuemper has played behind the third easiest environment in the National Hockey League among starters to date. Thomas Greiss, another name on that list, because he's having an exceptional season save percentage-wise. Again, great, but the easiest goaltending environment in the National Hockey League to date. So those guys have been good.
Kev, as a goalie, though, when you say easiest, playing when you don't get a lot of shots and going long stretches without shots, that can be challenging for goalies too, mentally maybe more than just physically. So how do you take that? How do you add that in?
Well, because this is not easiest based on workload. This is easiest based on shot quality. So you're absolutely right, and it is hard to quantify. So there have been times where I've talked about this, where goalies aren't busy, and that's a struggle in itself. The worst one to me is when you're not busy, and then you also don't, you know, the next shot you see is like, you know, 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 cross the slot line one-timer. Like, the quality is up. So this is measured in terms of, you're right, it can't take out, you know, in terms of not being busy. It doesn't factor in that. This is just the chances of the shots they see going in. How many times? It's just basically an expected save percentage. And sometimes you can be busy just with a bunch of easy shots. And that's when we talk about an easy environment. And the Coyotes, and especially the Islanders, are really good at not giving up the types of chances that are the highest quality. They give up a lot of low-quality shots. And so that can actually be even easier, because even if you're not busy, the shots you're getting are the 99%ers, the ones you stop almost every time. And what does that do? That makes you feel good about your game because you're touching the puck. But you're right. It doesn't quantify. The one thing it's not quantified here is sort of gap between shots and whether that can, you know, present a harder to measure challenge. But in terms of the shots he faces, Greiss and Kuemper, 1 and 3 in terms of low quality, easy saves. I didn't think he had a light. As a matter of fact, I would argue the tying goal, especially last night, I mean, that's an easy-to-handle first shot that shouldn't turn into a rebound that turns into the second goal, right? So those are the types of shots that should be handled easily. So, again, this is not taking anything away from those guys, because they're still actually outperforming those environments. But it's a lot easier to perform behind that. And Binnington is actually top of the league in terms of the amount of lateral plays the Blues give up. They give up the most in the league across the slot line, and he's been way above average on those. 6 goals on those types of chances alone, he has saved them above the league average or the expected save percentage for those types of chances. So that's why, to me, Binnington would probably weight a little higher. Robin Lehner, I don't have all his numbers in front of me. When you look at, you know, I don't have the exact environment, but watching some of their games, there's nights where you're like, yeah, you know, those are tougher chances. They're giving up more odd man rushes there than he used to see in New York. And to me, he'd be in that conversation because he's managed to sustain, you know, a 938 save percentage even after moving away from the Islanders in an easy environment. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, wins and save percentage are probably what's going to win the Vezina. And for sure, Darcy Kuemper, if he continues up this pace, will be deservedly in the conversation. But I just wanted to add a little context because, you know, I do think there are things that we do not see that are not measured elsewhere that dictate just how easy or how hard a night is. Up until a 3-game stretch last week, like, Lundqvist went through a little bit of a slump and dropped just outside of the top 10 in terms of the adjusted number. In other words, how much better, how much you're outperforming your environment. But up until that point, he was number 1 in the NHL by a long shot, and that was well giving up a whole bunch of goals. That's just how loose the New York Rangers have been in front of him. Some of the others surprised me. We talked about Bobrovsky, toughest environment. Martin Jones, second toughest environment. Again, not a surprise if you watch the Sharks up until the last couple weeks. The surprises, Grubauer, who I expect the Oilers will see on Wednesday, a fourth toughest environment up to last week, and Carter Hart with the fourth or fifth toughest, right? They were kind of right around each other, Hart and Grubauer. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that Carter Hart's been in a situation where, you know, it has been a tough workload in terms of the way they defend in front of him. And a lot of people just look at that 898 and say, oh, he's been a disappointment in his second season. But when you factor in the types of chances he's seen, it's a lot less so.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. You mentioned expected goals. So here's my one question about it, though. Because I know it takes, okay, here's a shot from the slot. But I'm sorry, yeah. When it's Leon Draisaitl from the slot and Patrick Russell from the slot, the expected goal can't be the same, but it's rated the same because of where the shot comes from. So that's got to be...
That's in the public data. That's not in ClearSight Analytics.
They factor in shooting percentage. They factored in? Okay. So where is that?
Yeah,
how could more people get that stuff then?
Well, and to give you an example, you know, and again, hey, listen, I know a lot of people in the public analytics side are going to be like, real easy for you to say this. Like, I don't get to look under the hood and see how ClearSight does this. I trust their work. I trust the people doing it. A lot of people in the public sphere, before they put any faith in it, would like to see their math. You could show me their math and I wouldn't know whether, you know, that's not how my brain works. So a lot of people have questions about quote unquote black box analytics. But that is one of the differences here. And according to them, like they go through it every weekend and they compare their expected goal model to real. And for the last couple of weeks, they've been in that 99.5, 99.7, say, you know, like percentage range in terms of expected matching real. So, you know, it does factor in more than what you're seeing in the public sphere, Jason. But in terms of everybody being able to look at it, they don't get to because it's private and because they sell it to teams and because it costs a lot of money to create this stuff. There's a lot of people involved, a lot of quality control involved, and a lot invested in it, so they don't just spill it all out publicly. But the good news is there are some things that have been shared with me, and we've sort of agreed that we're going to go over a complete Oilers breakdown in terms of their goalies and what it looks this year compared to last year, and I'll have that all for you on Monday.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because Oiler fans are wondering where the Oilers rank, and you know,
I think Koskinen was fifth, sixth easiest environment. That was a week ago when we looked at it. But like I said, we're going to pull up the up to date numbers over the weekend, and for next Monday, I'll have a complete breakdown. Really curious to see where they are last year compared to this year.
I watched the game, Skip. I can tell you, it's a massive improvement. Like, you look at where the shots are coming from on the penalty kill. That's, please get that, because to me, that's been one of the biggest. Everyone's like, well, the save percentage isn't sustainable. Well, sure, it isn't sustainable because many teams are up there. But the reality is, when you're not giving up as many high quality chances, of course you're going to be better. And that to me is the biggest difference.
Well, and that's why, you know, that's why I put the grain of salt on Kemper, right? Like, and again, he's actually outperforming. He's higher than expected for what they're giving up. But when what they're giving up is so much easier than what other goalies are facing, I think you need to, you know, that's the grain of salt you need to add before just declaring him the Vezina Trophy winner for the first 20 games.
And I don't know if they track this, but if you could ask them, how much of that stems from maybe the goalie's ability to control the rebounds, put him in position, so instead of kicking out rebounds and allowing second and third opportunities, if you're controlling them, either A, you hold the puck, or B, you give it to your defenseman, and now they get out of the zone earlier, how much of his play factors into giving up quality chances? Like, if he's controlling his rebounds where he should, like, I don't know if they go that in depth or not, but I'd love to know.
They grade the rebound chances based on placement, not just good rebound, bad rebound, but in terms of the results, obviously rebounds that lead to opposing shots, but that can be team factored too, right? If the coverage is blown, but they do grade out their rebounds. And so I will make sure that I ask to see whether, you know, we can go that deep under the hood to see where the Oilers are, and especially where the Oilers are this year compared to last. And of course, like rebounds, right? Like, it all ties in. So rebound control is a lot easier when the shot coming is easier. Like, there are situations where it's a tough chance. You're just trying to get a piece of it. If you've got a chance to be square, to be set, to be there early and see that shot coming in, now you have a much better chance of not just stopping that shot, but controlling that shot. And like you said, whether it's Pekka Rinne for years, for example, right? He catch everything, and the Nashville defenseman, I remember Shea Weber saying, you know, he saves us six scoring chances a game because instead of us as defense having to find a puck that kicked off his pads, he scoops it off the ice with his glove on its quality chance, kills the play, and we reset with a faceoff. So those things all factor in. We'll see how much we can weight them when we talk about it next week.
Kev, great stuff, man. I appreciate it. We look forward to it next Monday.